all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Oh, ho, 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 and welcome to Veterans Radio. This is our Christmas special for 2014. I don't even know what year or century I'm in today. It's been one of those hectic afternoons, it seems. But we want to know what you think about Christmas, what has been going on in your past when you were stationed overseas somewhere. We want you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600, and I'll give you the 800 number in a minute as soon as I can pull it out of my notebook here somewhere. So anyhow, as I said, we want to welcome you to Veterans Radio, and we want to wish everybody out there a very, very Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Year's. It's been a very hectic year, it seems like, not only for us. We've been lucky enough to land here at WHAM Talk 1600 in Southeast Michigan. And we're very grateful to the owners of WHAM and, of course, their staff and their crew for helping us out in the transition from one station to another and giving us a home for 2014. It looks like we're going to be here for a while, so we're really happy about that. And, again, I want to make sure that you know that what we're talking about today is where were you during Christmas when you were in the service. And my partner, Bob Gould, is not going to be here this evening because he is home on sick leave. And so it's just me. So we want to make sure that you give us a call if you have the opportunity and talk about it. We've got a couple of veterans that are going to be here. We've got one from Vietnam, one from Iraq and Afghanistan. I think we're going to have one that was in Kuwait. And we've got some other things that we're going to be talking about as we go along through the program. But first of all, we want to talk about, you know, throughout the year, we've been talking about educational opportunities for veterans and you know, all the different colleges that are putting together programs. Well, there's a program out there right now that we're going to be talking about just in one second, and it's called the Posse Foundation, which sounds really cool to me. I like the whole concept of Posse. I'm a big Cowboy Western fan. And joining me on the program right now is Debbie Beal. And, Debbie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And tell me about this program. It sounds really cool.
Oh, it is. It's a great program, relatively new. We're a 25-year-old organization, the Posse Foundation, and we started literally because of a young person who had dropped out of college. This was back in the 1980s. And he said, you know, I never would have dropped out if I had my posse with me.
Okay.
So for many years, we've been sending high school students to really great colleges and universities around the country. Groups of 10. But a few years ago, I got a call from the president of Vassar College, Cappy Bondhill, and she said, you know, what a great idea. You're sending a cohort, a team, a posse of 10 students together to college. Do you think this concept could be applied to post 9/11 U.S. veterans? And we thought, great idea. Let's try this. So with Vassar, a few years ago, we tried it, and we sent our first posse of U.S. veterans to Vassar. And since then, Wesleyan has joined, and Dartmouth has just joined, and we hope to expand the program over the next few years.
Well, it does sound like a great idea. I teach at a local community college, and it just sounds like a really good idea. You know,
you could nominate some vets.
Yes, we could. You know, if we could get a whole bunch of the veterans that are going to school there together, it's always difficult sometimes because veterans have a tendency to stay apart for a while as they try. You know, they're checking out the territory and seeing what's going on and making this transition.
Yeah, the transition is hard. You know, I think if you've had this incredible life experience serving in the military, and you come back, I think the average age of vets now post 9/11 is, you know, 27, 28. It's not maybe your first choice to think about an elite private school where most of the kids are 19, 20 years old. But if you have a cohort with you, people who've been through experiences like you, who are your age, it's different. So So when there's 10 in every class, there's going to be 40 vets on each of these campuses, and it creates a community for the vets.
Well, I can certainly relate to that, because when I got out of the service and I went back to school, I was 26. I think,
yeah.
I was 26, and I didn't know any other veterans on campus. And I did go. I ended up going to the University of Michigan, and it took a while for me to find out who the other members of my posse
right.
could be during that time. But I think it's such a great idea. So where do we go to find out information about this program?
Anyone interested either in nominating a veteran or a veteran herself or himself can go to our website. It's www.possefoundation.org. So it's P-O-S-S-E, foundation, all spelled out, .org. And you can search, you know, search around, and you'll see the veterans program on there, and there's lots of information.
It sounds like a fantastic idea. Do other colleges, can they just contact you and say, hey, we want to get in on this too?
Yeah, we're growing very carefully. We're probably going to add no more than two colleges or universities per year, and we're only going to do 10 to 12 institutions of higher education, kind of, you know, the very elite, very selective, wonderful colleges and universities.
And so we're looking at Ivy League guys, right?
That would be great too. Yeah.
Well, maybe we could set up some sort of extension, for this program for some of the other schools that are out there that would love to be involved in a program like this. So it's Posse,
sure.
possefoundation.org for any information about this. And obviously, you know, there's I probably should have thought about this or let you know about it earlier. There was a article that I read, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and it was talking about the lack of veterans that were coming out of these more prestigious schools.
Yes.
And
exactly.
And that they needed these somewhat genius type people to be in the military and to help out, you know, with these problem solving issues that go on out there. And I think it's a great idea. You know, we complain about our Congress and our, you know, our politics, because most of the politicians now do not have experience in the military. And if you can take these men and women that are coming back that already have amazing skills and amazing minds.
That's exactly right.
And get them.
We need them at these. We want to give back to them. They deserve a chance to experience the education at our finest institutions, as well as around the country at other institutions. They deserve a chance to become senators and run hospitals and run newspapers and
Absolutely.
Be in corporate America. We need them there. I wanted to mention one more thing, which is that with our partner schools, Posse says, yes, use the GI Bill, use the Yellow Ribbon funding, use all the federal funding you have. But when that funding runs out, our partner schools will guarantee full tuition for the 4 years that you're on campus. So it's a really, really great opportunity.
I was going to say, and you're talking a couple of dollars at these schools.
Yeah, I am.
Holy mackerel. So once we've used all our benefits that are available to us, the Dartmouths of the world will pick up the remaining tuition.
And they'll meet full need for the entire time that they're there.
Wow.
It's really great.
This is a great program, and I encourage our audience, especially those of you out there that have veterans in your family that are trying to figure out what they're going to do in the next phase of their lives, give this organization, not only go to their websites, possefoundation.org. Is there a number that they could call?
There is. It's 212-405-1691. That's our headquarters in New York. And we will direct them to the right people if they ask about the veterans program.
Okay, 212-405-1691. We're talking to Debbie Beal, who is the head of this program. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was there in the beginning in 1989 when Posse started, and I'm still there today.
It's amazing when you find something you're really passionate about, isn't it?
It is great.
Well, Debbie, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. Have a blessed holiday season, and thank you again for putting together this program, and I'm anxious to hear. Give us a call in the future and let us know how it's going. Maybe we can help out
tomorrow. I appreciate that, and happy holidays to you and all the veterans.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. We will be back in just a moment. We need your calls here on Veterans Radio today. Where were you stationed when you were overseas during the Christmas holidays? And I'll tell you my sad story when we get back after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Living at American House is like being on a cruise ship with all the lovely surroundings, the many, many activities, and the people to share with. It's so comfortable to be here. I feel safe. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up.
When you move into an American House senior living community, you open the door to a new world of possibilities. Our life enrichment directors are committed to enhancing the lives of residents every day. We look forward to finding out what interests you.
I just get dressed up and walk down to the dining room and enjoy my meals in the company of other people at my table.
For more moments made in American House, go to AmericanHouse.com. Again, that's AmericanHouse.com. Or watch us at YouTube.com/AmericanHouseLiving.
Living here has enriched my life. I'm Carol Huck, and I made in American House.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and happy holidays to all of our listeners out there. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, whatever it is that you're celebrating. This is the time of year that we all get together with our families and talk about it and have great, great, great memories of that. Except for those that are overseas, in the service of our country. I'm going to bring on a new friend of ours, right now, because since we were both served during the Vietnam time period, I figured it might be a good opportunity for us to commiserate together about what happened during our Christmases. So welcome back to Veterans Radio, please. Bob Newcomb, author of It's My Grenade, Get Your Own. Bob, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Corporal Newcomb reporting as ordered, sir.
Hey, that's funny. Yes, Corporal. I finished reading your book, and I'm listening, and you're looking back here, and all the Army enlisted ranks and officers and stuff. I guess you had no regard for warrant officers because we're not in the book.
Well, no, I actually had no contact with warrant officers, but I did develop a healthy disrespect for authority. Most of the guys in my unit that served in combat never came back, if they were any kind of soldier at all, being less than a sergeant. I came back as a corporal.
Well, stuff happens, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Every once in a while. Well, Bob, when were you in Vietnam? Let's put it that way first.
Well, I arrived in March 10th of 1968. My unit was helping with the cleanup after the Tet Offensive. At the time, we were south of Saigon, just on the northern border of the Mekong Delta, supporting the 9th Infantry Division. We were, as I mentioned before, I think I'm not allowed to say this word, but I'm going to say it anyway. We were a bastard artillery unit given to anyone that needed us.
Well, yeah, I can tell you that. When reading your book, you guys were all over the place.
Yeah, we went everywhere. And anywhere there was, and matter of fact, our battery motto, if you've ever watched the cowboy show Paladin, have gun, will travel. That was actually our battery motto. We had that painted on all our vehicles. Have gun, will travel. We were always on a one-hour alert for airlift anywhere we went. It's like 1 hour from now, kick the sandbags down. The Chinooks are going to be here to pick us up to go somewhere else.
I might have seen you guys around. I might have seen some of those things around there. You'd be surprised. There were a lot of warrant officers flying Chinooks. We just didn't, they didn't put our ranks on our helmets and all that other stuff, so we were probably out there somewhere. So
I can still hear a Chinook from 20 miles away.
Oh, I know. The sounds of the Chinook and the Huey are just so iconic, and I do the same thing, and if I'm able to pick the direction it's coming from and everything else, and people go, "What? You can't even hear it. You can't hear anything. How can you hear that?"
Exactly.
We're talking with Bob Newcomb here on Veterans Radio about Christmas and where you happen to be serving during your time over there. And I did locate our 800 number. It is 844-838-1600. That's 844-838-1600. Or locally in southeastern Michigan, that number is 734 800-822-1600. So you were in country in the end of 68, correct?
Yes, sir. I was still serving. I'd just gotten back from R&R in Australia.
That was too bad.
And my unit had airlifted into. And by the way, I'll mention that throughout my tour, my assignments for my unit kept getting worse and worse and worse. And excuse me. By December, we had been serving with the supporting the 25th Infantry Division in Tainan Province for some 2 or 3 months, and my unit was sent to Fire Support Base Bragg 2, which was at the base of Nui Ba Den, which is Vietnamese for the Black Virgin Mountain.
Very familiar with Nui Ba Den. As we were talking, I have pictures of me landing on top of that thing.
And that was a very, very bad place to be. If you could see Nui Ba Den, you were in a very bad place.
It was not good. We owned the top and the bottom of it, and the bad guys owned the rest of it. And we used to, in our Hueys, to take off from the top of Nui Ba Den. There wasn't enough space to get up enough airspeed to hit transitional lift, so we dived down the side of the mountain to get enough airspeed to take off. And every time we did that, we always expected to get blown apart. Luckily, we did not. But I was also in Tainan Province. I was stationed part-time out in Quan Loi, and then we would go north from there to go visit the people in Cambodia before it was popular.
Exactly.
But I was checking my flight records because I arrived in Vietnam on December 12th of 1968. And on December 25th, I was flying. I flew 6 hours that day, which doesn't sound like a lot because you spend another 3 hours or 4 hours sitting on the ground waiting to go somewhere. But since I was the new guy in country, I'm guessing that we must have resupplied or maybe took out the turkey dinners to everybody. I'm not sure what it was. But I do remember flying over the top of the Bob Hope concert. That was in Long Bend.
We were never able to see Bob Hope. We were always out somewhere. Of my 11 and a half months in the bush, I was probably in base camp 2 or 3 weeks out of the entire period there. But as far as the Christmas story is concerned, if you want me to dive right into that, I will.
Go right ahead.
Okay, well, as I said, we were at Fire Support Base Bragg 2, and it was a very, very dangerous place. We were being mortared and machine gunned and sniper shot at, if not daily, absolutely never more than every other day. And it was just a very bad place. So at night, we practiced extreme night discipline. As you know, I was in a 105 howitzer battery. We had 6 guns in a little circular perimeter of maybe 5 acres. And so at night, you know, you'd hunker down, and you needed a little light to shoot your howitzers in support of American troops. But you dare not, you know, the old story of third man on a match kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You dare not have a flashlight or anything exposed at night because you're going to get shot at. And Christmas Eve came, and we heard a rumor that there was a ceasefire.
I heard the same one.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that one, yes.
And so we thought, well, okay, there's a ceasefire, which means we're not allowed to shoot unless we're being attacked. And we actually did not have any fire missions that day, but we, you know, still, you can't pay attention to that for your own personal safety. So we were still hunkered down at night. And one of the other gun crews, my close personal friend, Sergeant Shattuck, from New York, had gotten a care package, and it was a little Christmas tree. And it was about 2 feet tall. It was fully decorated with non-breakable ornaments and little Christmas lights on it and a little star on the top, but we had nothing to plug it into. And so, you know, I went over and they'd actually brought us out a few cases of beer. And two or three of my buddies were going from gun pit to gun pit, you know, being cheerful and saying, okay, yeah, you got another beer? So we ended up over at Shattuck's gun pit, and he brought out his old Christmas tree and showed it to us, and I said, you know, let's light it up. And so we're out there. Nobody would dare light a match, but we're talking about, let's light up this little Christmas tree. So we ran over to the fire direction center, and we stole about 75 yards of commo wire, which is not designed to carry 110 volts. But we risked it and hooked it up to their little generator from the fire direction center, ran it over like a couple of scurrying people dragging wire around, and I don't know how we didn't get electrocuted, but we didn't, and we wired it up this little tree and lit it up and set it up on top of his bunker, and it was dead center in the middle of our firing battery. We put this thing up on his bunker, and it was like a big beacon, like, here we are, anybody that wants to shoot at us. And as soon as we were laughing, and a couple guys in another gun crew heard us laughing, came out and took a look, and they started screaming. And within like 2 or 3 minutes, everybody's up yelling, screaming, and singing Christmas songs. And the battery commander finally heard all this people singing and yelling, and he came out, and to his horror, saw this Christmas tree lit up right in the middle of our battery, and immediately told us, turn that thing off, you fools. What are you doing? And we did.
I'm sure it was a little
really
bit...
a good, it was really a good Christmas because of that.
I think it does sound like that. I'm sure his words were probably a little bit more colorful than that. But
there were some expletives that I have deleted.
That's good. That is good. As I said, I know that I had worked on Christmas Day of 68. And again, I think it was 2 days prior to that Bob Hope was putting on his Christmas special in Long Bend. And again, being the new guy, I didn't get to go. And I got to fly near it. I got too close, and we were chased away by other gunships for some reason. I don't know. I guess they thought we were getting too close to Bob Hope. But it was, you know, the USO in all their glory, they're magnificent. It's a magnificent organization, and they've been working since the 1940s and making sure that all the veterans overseas have a Christmas and have shows that are coming in and out all over the place. And we're going to be talking with another Iraq veteran in the second half of the program, and I'm sure he's going to be able to update us on what Bob Hope is, you know, and the shows and USO is doing. If Bob Hope is back, that's one of those miracles that could occur on Christmas. You never know. But
well, Bob Hope was an angel given to the soldiers from World War II, Korea, and through Vietnam. But I have to throw in one little sad note. Sergeant Shattuck, whose Christmas tree we all celebrated that night, was killed 5 days later.
It's a sobering experience, and I'm sure that you probably do the same reminiscing in your own mind around the holidays when you start seeing the faces of the men in today's world, and men and women that have been lost to you. You know, they're there, and then a second later they're gone. And you know how important it is to keep these people in your heart and to remember that they were fighting a mission that was very difficult. Anybody who's ever been in combat doesn't want anybody else to have to go through it again. And maybe that's a wish that we can make for this holiday season.
Well, I can only wish every veteran that's within the sound of our voices Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and God bless.
And God bless you too, Bob. Bob Newcomb is the author of It's My Hand Grenade, or It's My Grenade, Get Your Own. You can find it at Amazon. You can find it on our website, and I encourage you to read it. It's an enjoyable read, and there are some pretty good stories in there, and especially if you were in Three Corps, because he was all over the place. So thank you very much, Bob, and we'll be talking to you again.
Okay.
Have a great holiday.
You too. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right, we're here on Veterans Radio. We want to know where you were when you were in the service of your country. Were you in Vietnam? Were you in Bosnia? Were you in Iraq, Afghanistan? Give us a call here locally, 734-822-1600, or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-838-1600. And we will take your calls and find out what's going on in your neck of the woods and what was happening wherever you happen to be. I was talking about Bob Hope just a minute ago, and we did a program on Bob Hope, and you can probably find it in our archives at veteransradio.net in December 2012. We devoted the whole program to the USO and to Bob Hope's shows. And as I said, I didn't get the opportunity to see them. A lot of my friends did. And boy, oh boy, you want to talk about somebody that could lift your spirits, because when he came to the hospitals, wherever he happened to be, he would go from each individual person's bed and say something to them. So we got to make sure to keep Bob Hope in our minds this Christmas season and the USO all the time. This is an organization that I strongly encourage you to support if you can. That's USO.org. And we'll be right back. We're going to be talking with Father Ron Camarda. He's a Roman Catholic priest who was in Fallujah in 2004. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. Christmas, as long as it doesn't fall on my driveway, it's okay. So here we are in Veterans Radio. We want to know where you served when you during the Christmas time period, when you were in the service, whether you were in Vietnam where there was no snow ever, or maybe you were in Bosnia where there was snow, or obviously no snow in Iraq. I understand that there is snow in Afghanistan up in the mountains. Never been there myself, but we'd like you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio at toll-free 844-838-1600. That's 844-838-1600. Or locally, you can give us a call at 734-822-1600. Everything is 1600. It works out nicely. Speaking of Christmas spirit, for those of you that are looking for the perfect gift for somebody on short notice, Veterans Radio has now put out its own little booklet called Vietnam Stories, The Best of Veterans Radio. And this is a collection of 11 stories that we felt were some of our best programs that had to do with Vietnam. And you can get this book by going to our website and clicking on Support Veterans Radio, and it's a way of our raising funds, because it does cost us a couple of dollars. We're a very small, non-profit, for-profit organization. How's that for terminology? Because we don't make any money doing the program. We all use all the funds to keep the program on the air, and it does cost money to do that. So we're making our own pledge request here that you go to Veterans Radio, click on the Donate Now, and for $25, we'll send you a copy of the Vietnam Stories, Best of Veterans Radio. It's really kind of interesting. There's a neat map of Vietnam on the back, and I think we cover all the different services in there, and our good friend Gary Lilly, a couple of his stories are included. And so we want to make sure that you, when you get the opportunity to get a hold of that book, it's really neat, and it's something that I think that you'll enjoy. We're going to try and put together some other packages, maybe some CDs of our best programs also, and make them available to our listeners as well. In the meantime, you can always go to veteransradio.net and click on the archives and can listen to the last 2 or 3 years of programs. We're trying to get more and more up there as we can. So we're trying to get a hold of Ron Camarda right now and haven't been able to. So I think what we're going to do, if we're ready in the control room, is we've got a little segment that we're going to take out of the program from 2012 about Bob Hope and the USO. And so I'm going to play that right now. And if we get Ron on the air, we'll interrupt. But in the meantime, listen to this program about Bob Hope on Veterans Radio.
Bob Hope was not only a great comedian, he also was a great hero. What he did for this country in times of crisis will always be remembered.
I just want you boys to see what you're fighting for, that's all.
I was on radio at NBC, and the producer said, they want you at March Field next year. I said, what's March Field? He said, that's an Air Force base in Riverside. I said, well, what do we do there? You know, there's no war or anything. He said, well, they want you down there. It's a great audience.
There you are, Clooney. You're down on your knees with 12 suitcases on your back. What are you going to do now?
Well, no sense wasting a position like this. Get out the dice.
And the audience was so great. I said, wait a minute. How long is this thing going on? And Christmas time, war started, then it became dramatic. So we went 5 straight years all around the world just doing troops and troop shows. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me.
Well, here I am in London, but here we are on the USS Boxer.
Here I am in Alaska.
Colorado Springs.
Guam.
Tokyo.
And here we are in Incirlik, Turkey. Incirlik, that's a Turkish word meaning don't knock it. It beats Vietnam. Uban. Takli. Karat. Achukuchi. Udapad. Ban Rang Dang Dang. Chung Ching Chung Kang Air Base. I'm very thrilled to be here on... Where are we?
I was a little kid during the Second World War, and had these really vivid memories of sitting by the radio and listening to Hope.
Some night.
Some park.
Some moon.
Some bench.
Some grass. Some dew.
I don't.
Right away, you know what I mean?
The soldiers and sailors that he was entertaining were a real part of the show. You heard these people who were starved for entertainment, starved for some feeling of normal life again. And you heard this tremendous outpouring of energy from them.
Bob Hope, when he came to entertain the troops, it made us, and it probably made other troops feel the same way, made them forget for a little bit the killing and the dying that was taking place, even though it was for just a short time.
What's the difference between you and an idiot?
Well, for one thing, you don't have a mustache.
Such a thrill for me, all these men whistling and screaming.
Yeah, they've been in the jungle too long.
Hey, a little girl, comb your hair, fix your makeup. Soon he will open the door.
He was not interested in anything but pleasing those people.
When you went out on the stage, the acceptance was beyond a great audience, you know, that was going to give you a standing ovation before you even opened your mouth.
Say, Bob, am I standing in the right place?
Don't worry, honey. If you're not, they'll move the bass.
I don't know what I'm doing here, Bob. I can't sing and I can't song.
Oh, just stand there. They'll do the singing and dancing, all right?
He kept the morale up. That was what his job was, to keep that morale up for everybody.
I'll give you 8 bars to make your fame and fortune. Otherwise, it's back to the swamp. Go.
I met Mr. Hope, and he wanted me to try a few bars of White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
He kind of stunned me with his reaction because he said,
you know, Crosby's got kids everywhere. I don't know what you guys did to get here, but let that be a lesson to you.
He brought a little bit of home 10,000 miles away, and especially at Christmas time.
Is Specialist 4th Brian H. O'Connell here? Where is he? Would you come up, please?
I went over to Vietnam approximately in June or July of 65. My wife was about 6 months pregnant.
Just before we got on the plane, his wife brought this over to us, And here's a picture of twins, his twins that he's never seen.
I had no idea what they looked like. I just knew that they were twin boys.
And I just want you to take a peek at these little kids. They're the first time he's ever seen them. Those...
My dad didn't like to talk about Vietnam much from his personal experiences. But one thing Dad did talk about from the war was the receiving the picture on stage with Bob Hope.
Congratulations.
When Bob gave me the brag book, I was proud, really proud of him, you know, and I thought it was great. I appreciated it very much. You know, it was a great feeling.
The whole front row, I mean, the whole front section was always the guys that had, like, a plasma drip going in.
And they would be in beds. You knew that this was serious business. And to hear them laugh.
You remember me, Rosemary's Baby?
On my face, Lodner.
Yeah. You know, this isn't such a bad part. What the hell is all that firing over? General, will you call off this stuff, this war, while we're on, please?
He would walk into a hospital, and only he could do this. I mean, he would lead the gang. It was five women and myself and Peter Leeds and Les Brown, and we all, big troop. And he'd walk in there. His opening remark was, "Don't get up, fellas."
You were seeing kids that had their arms and legs removed. You were seeing guys that had the whole front of their bodies sewn up with great big staples this thick.
I broke down and cried. And he took me aside and gave me a lecture. This isn't why we're here. They want lightness. They want a joke. They want you to pretend that nothing is wrong.
Mini skirts are bigger than ever. Even some of the fellas are wearing them. Don't laugh. If you'd have thought of it, you wouldn't be here.
I think one of the most emotional shows I ever played was when I played for the 1st Marine Division in Pavuvu, down in the South Pacific, because we were playing an island called Bonica, and this fellow flew over and said, "Could you possibly do an extra show for the 1st Marine Division? They've never had a show, and they would really love to see, and they're going to invade Peleliu." And so we flew over the next morning, and you knew when you walked out there that you're playing for 15,000 kids, that a lot of those guys you never see again. And as it worked out, 60% of those kids were knocked off in this invasion of Peleliu.
At the end of the show, we would traditionally sing Silent Night.
It's a holiday season. You're away from home, a long way away from home. And they begin singing Silent Night, and the entire audience chimes in. And by the time you're singing the last...
We're going to hold off on that, because that's what we're going to go out on the program today, is Silent Night during the Bob Hope shows. I hope you enjoyed that. We enjoyed putting it together and for your enjoyment. Bob Hope obviously means so much to so many people in the USO, especially to today's generation. But to ours, all of the movie stars and things that he would bring to Vietnam or bring to World War II, and as they said during this segment, you know, they didn't have to have any talent. They just had to stand there because we were looking at round-eyed girls, and many of us hadn't seen any in a long, long time. And it was kind of humorous to see that, but what a wonderful man, Bob Hope. I've got another wonderful man that we've finally been able to track down, and this is a gentleman that I met in 2010, at Military Writers Society of America's conference, and he's just impressed me with his understanding of the human spirit, and I'm happy that we were able to get him on today. And this is Father Ron Camarda, and Father, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry you couldn't find me, but I was working with the elves for a while.
Well, that's understandable. It's understandable. Father Camarda wrote a book called Tear in the Desert, and this is what really got me excited to talk to him again about his experiences in Iraq in 2004 in Fallujah. He was called up into the Marines and as a chaplain. So tell me a little bit about your experience there, and then we'll get into what happened during the Christmas season while you were over there.
Great. In July 4th, actually, Independence Day, right the day after, I was recalled to, and they called me after I was just about ready to retire, and they said, "Hey, Padre, do you have experience with Marines?" And I said, "No." They said, "We know you're lying. Pack your bags. You're going to Iraq." And I'd been out for 7 years, and so I was, within a month, I even tried to tell them I had tickets with my dad to the Jaguar game, but that didn't work. But so I was in 2 weeks. I was off to the Marine base in Camp Pendleton, and then on September 2nd to December 23rd, we were receiving casualties every day in Fallujah, Iraq. It was like a MASH unit.
Mm-hmm.
So they would come in, about 1,500 casualties I had, and 81 deaths, and 12 men and women died in my arms. And a lot of times I'd just be singing to them, or I had to love them like my own children, because sometimes God would tap me on the shoulder and say, "Tell them you love them." And sometimes I would walk and say, "God, I can't tell you that. I can't tell them that because I'll be toast."
Mm-hmm.
So the battle for Fallujah, we didn't know it was over. Came to December 24th, I was out at about a lot of services, and I was getting ready for midnight mass. And just as I was getting ready for midnight mass, and we were driving back, the Humvee broke down. I was the only priest there in Fallujah, so they had asked me to get out with my RP. Right outside the city of Fallujah, we did not know the war was over, the battle was over. And it was absolutely scary. It was rainy, it was wet, it was drizzly. And then for about an hour, and then it started, they finally picked us up at 20 minutes for midnight in Fallujah. We used glow sticks for midnight mass. We had over about 400 people there gathered together, the Lutheran chaplain and myself. And then when next morning I went out for, I finished 19 services, and I was in Fallujah. I'd just been there with Colonel Michael Shuff, who was in charge of the whole battle. Tiny room, and they were feeding everyone. And the guy across from me says, "Could you go up to this last Marine that's out on watch? He didn't get any chance for anybody to get in communion." And I was just so dog tired. He was about six floors up, and I said, "Okay." And I dragged myself up, and my homily for the whole Christmas time was, "This has to be the best Christmas ever, or there's something wrong." But I didn't believe it anymore, I don't think. I made it all the way up. I could smell dead things, animals, probably people. And when I got to the top, there's this guy working out at the top, at the very top there, and I said to him, "I bet you the one smoking is the Catholic." So I asked him to put it out, and he comes over, 19-year-old Marine, and he goes to the side, and this room with broken glass and everything, and all I had, Eucharist. And I said to him, my homily, I said, "If this is not the best Christmas ever, then you're not knowing anything." And he looked at me like I was crazy. And then I put the communion on his hands. It was like putting the baby in the cradle. It was so filthy. He'd been out there for all these months. And then I don't even know if he went to church much, but I handed it to him and reverently received it. So he's just there, quiet moment usually after that, and started singing, "Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth." And then this kid started singing louder than me. But started singing to the point he was going, "Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices. Oh, no." And I was like, oh, my gosh, everyone around the world could see through this. And he's like, I was just absolutely blown away. And I opened my eyes and I could tears streaming down his face. Mm-hmm. And then I realized I had it too. I could see a reflection in his eyes, my own reflection.
He opens his eyes and looks at me and he goes, "Yeah, Padre, this is the best Christmas I've ever had. Thank you." And gives me this big bear hug. This Marina blew me away because it was sort of like the healing that God comes into this world and catches us off out of surprise. So in a way, it's 10 years since then. And I always remember, I didn't even catch that guy, his name, and I'm just so appreciative. And you never know what God's going to be doing.
No, so, and you can hear it in your voice how meaningful that whole, that just that one service was for you.
Yeah, it was, I almost missed it. Didn't want to go for it, but,
mm-hmm.
And so since then, I can sometimes share that story with families, and I've met the families that some of them have died, and they just are so grateful that they had the opportunity to be in the presence, and they thank me for, sometimes I would sing a Holy Night, I think, or the Tear in the Desert, the guy that died.
Mm-hmm.
It was right at that moment, I was singing it in November 12th, but it was really November 11th at 11 p.m. at night, our time. And his mother says, it had to come out of his left eye because he was left-handed. And God bless you. So they always surprise you. So I'm in touch with a lot of the Marines and the soldiers and the Army soldiers. And it's just, Fallujah is not there, but it's physically there, but it's so real in my mind and in my heart and in my soul.
Well, yeah.
I'm writing a second book called Solitude.
Oh, okay. Well, we need to get a hold of that when that one's done. I always, and I've told a lot of people about you. I'm hoping that they've bought your book because whenever I find myself feeling like I'm lost in the desert, I always go to your book and it just seems to pick me up a little bit and, makes me realize that, okay, you're not the only one. You know, you don't have any problems. These are people who have really big problems. In relation to what you're going through, so I just wanted to let you know that you affect me every day, and I never even realized it, and you never know who it is that's going to have that kind of effect on you as you go through your life, and especially with some of these men and women that you've run into during your time in the military, and at this time of year, especially because this is where I did my rotation, sort of like yours. I just got home. 47 years ago the other day, and I just see I see these faces all the time now, and
mm-hmm.
you need to figure out a way to work through that, and it is such a joyous time of the year, really it is, and I think that your sermon about being the best Christmas ever, I can mm-hmm. relate to that, because when I came home, it was the best Christmas ever.
Yeah, and it wasn't because we're mourning anymore. We're actually rejoicing, and someone once said to me, "Would you wish that you didn't have to go over there?" I said, "You got to be crazy. That's like the best Christmas gift I ever got." And sometimes some of the best things you have to struggle the most with and wrestle most with.
And I agree, Father. You saw really the best and the worst of humanity. It seemed like, wherever you have served, anybody out there, World War II on, you see all of this killing, unfortunately, but you also see so many amazing acts of humanity and people just trying to help as they go along with their lives. I'm fascinated by the whole thing, and I appreciate your taking the time to give us a call. And I want to remind everybody that they can get this book and really get it. It's called Tear in the Desert, and this man, did some amazing things, and I think that there are probably many, many more people out there that you touch than you realize.
Wow, there's about 7,000 books out there that I've published, The best thing to way to get it is just go to Amazon, and you can go to the website and actually see the interview that I did on EWTN. If you search around for it, it's not that well.
Mm-hmm.
But the better thing is just go to Amazon and you can get used ones for like $5. It's very humbling.
It is. All the work that you put into it, and you can find it for $5 on there.
Oh, my God. But as a writer, the most important thing, and as a veteran like you are, Dale, the main thing is, and why you do the radio station, you're not doing it to get rich. You're doing it because it's the gift that you have, and you're sharing that gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not about the, you just want to get your stories out there, or you want to get the stories out there so people don't forget, you know, what these men and women have been going through and are still going through. And if they do come home, man, you better get a hold of them and give them a big hug, because they just, that's what they want to do. They want to be home.
You know, what I tell you is last year I was at, giving mass, and I don't do it regularly in a certain place, but I was at, for the Christmas evening mass. And this Marine veteran comes up to me, and he goes, Father, I was with you in Fallujah. I'm so glad to see you.
Amazing impact.
And then I had to go on and celebrate the mass with everyone.
Well, Ron, thank you very much for agreeing to be on the program, and we'll be talking to you again. And, of course, my prayers and hopes go out to you. Have a blessed, blessed Christmas. And
thank
I know
you, and God bless everyone and your listeners. And no, this is a great radio station, so do some great jobs for Dale and come. All right?
I'll do that.
Love you, man.
Thank you very much, Ron. We'll be talking to you again soon.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Wow. That's Ron Kamada, is the author of Tear in the Desert, about his experiences in Fallujah. He was working in a MASH hospital, and he had the stories are just amazing. I mean, really uplifting to me. We got about a minute to go. And so I want to take this opportunity from all of us here at Veterans Radio to thank all of you for your support, to wish you a very, very Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Year's. And to Derek and to Nina and to Bob and to Jim, thank you again for all the support that you've given me and Veterans Radio. We couldn't do it without anybody out there. We're going to close our program, Christmas program, with The Silent Night from one of the Bob Hope USO shows. And so, as we go along, remember to go to our website, talk to our sponsors. You know, you got Schoolcraft College, American House, and a number of other people, Legal Help for Veterans. And if you got problems with the VA, go see them. Right now, we are going to be saying, I got 10 seconds as I'm counting. All right, we back time the music. So until next time, on behalf of all of us, you are dismissed.
At the end of the show, we would traditionally sing Silent Night.
It's a holiday season. You're away from home, a long way away from home. And they begin singing Silent Night, and the entire audience chimes in. And by the time you're singing the last refrain, most men, and we were men then, had tears rolling down their eyes.
And all you could hear were people crying.
They wanted a dry eye in the place.
It was beautiful, and it was happy, and it was very sad at the same time.
There was this entire audience of mostly men just in tears, and of course, we were all in tears. And I will never forget that moment, every single show.
Have a Merry Christmas and God bless you. Bye.
So joyous, and you know, we laugh till we cry.
There are these guys going to go, maybe some, a number of them are going to go die. We're all laughing together. That's a real service.
In a lot of ways, that's probably the last performance any of those guys saw. In that regard, that speaks volumes about the man.
Bob Hope is one of a kind. He's a saint, and if he isn't, he should be. God bless Bob Hope.